Ladies and gentlemen, we present at this time the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Ladies and gentlemen, today Father Coughlin brings to you a most important address. It is a challenge to American labor. It is a challenge to American citizens who are wearied with the propaganda of communism and Nazism. There are probably three or four radio stations in this network which, through no fault of the management, are obliged to divide this presentation following the half-hour mark. In one or two instances, the last half-hour of the presentation will be carried on at a later period in the day. Recognizing this necessity, Father Coughlin has been dividing his discourse to accommodate himself to circumstances over which neither he or the radio management have any control. But today there will be no division of the discourse. Father Coughlin will continue through the full hour without pausing until he will have finished his speech. It will be to the advantage of all in this audience, therefore, to secure a copy of today's address, not only for their own satisfaction, but in order to read it to some group of friends. Write directly to Father Coughlin at Royal Oak, Michigan, for your copy. Once again, may I inform you that this broadcast is paid for at full commercial rates. It is supported only by the profits derived from the sale of Social Justice Magazine and by the free will offerings which individuals care to make. Father Coughlin plans to remain on the air all summer, all year, and throughout the following year, without interruption, provided it is your will that he do so. And now, may I present to you Father Coughlin in his address entitled, An Appeal to the Laboring Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, and friends, it is evident from my mailbag that the laboring men of America are being propagandized. As a result, labor is confused. Irresponsible writers and speakers are constantly informing labor that Father Coughlin and social justice are not the agents. A carefully planned campaign is attempting to sell the idea that I am opposed to unionism, that I am a tool of the industrialists, of monopolists and economic slave owners. Unfortunately, many laboring men are not gifted either with the ability or time to analyze this trickery or to inspect the record of the past 10 years of my public utterances. Consequently, for the sake of clarification, permit me to devote this broadcast to some pertinent remarks addressed particularly to the laboring class of America. Gentlemen, roughly speaking, there are some 30 million of you who are classified as laborers. Over the years, you have been better circumstanced in the United States than were your fellow laborers dwelling under foreign flags. Until the close of the World War, greater opportunities were extended to you and to your class in the United States than elsewhere. Better working conditions were yours, and a greater share in the wealth of the land came to you through your pay envelopes than anywhere else in the world. All that, unfortunately, belonged to you yesterday. I am fully conscious, alas, of the things which are related to the present. There are 12 million of you unemployed. There are 2 or 3 million of you working on the WPA. There are 7 or 8 million of you engaged in industry, commerce, and elsewhere, at less than living wages. Partly because the wheels of production have been slowed down. Partly because there is a lack of purchasing power in the nation. Partly because you and your fellow citizens are victims of an industrial warfare with its interminable strife. And partly because you are pawns upon the chessboard of internal labor dissension. A dissension which is notorious for the ill feeling existing between the American Federation of Labor and the CIO. It would be most improper for me or for any other person to take sides against the laboring men and unionism. It would be most unchristian on my part to oppose any efforts honestly spent in gaining economic independence. Years ago, I pleaded with you to forsake your individualism and to adopt the principle of unionism. Constantly, I have been teaching you that it is not only your right to unionize, to organize, but it is your duty, your obligation. I still plead with you to cling to these objectives. And I repeat what I have so often said, that unionism must not only be the concern of artisans, such as carpenters, machinists, electricians, and other branches of skilled labor. It should likewise be the concern of the millions of men who are engaged in unskilled labor, particularly in mass production factories. That individual or corporation opposed to the unionization of labor is opposed to a principle of Christianity and Americanism. On that point, let us all agree at the outset. But be patient with me as I draw to your attention some thoughts and facts which are related to this question. First of all, you have just cause to complain against the economic conditions under which you live. The socialist and the communist leaders have emphasized these causes, and so have the Christian and American leaders. Among them, there is not much dispute over the facts of the speed-up system and the starvation wages which you are paid. Together, socialist and communist, Christian and American, stand in pointing out the iniquities of the layoff programs which characterize industry and many of the other evils which have brought about the concentration of wealth in the hands of a few and the multiplication of poverty on the backs of the many. Together, socialist, communist, Christian, and American appeal to all laborers to organize on the basis that in union there is strength. The Christian and the American do not quarrel with the communist and the socialist on that point. And personally, I do not surrender first place without valid argument in my constant campaign for 13 years in an effort to teach you laborers that you have been victimized by an economic system which is unsound un-Christian, and un-American. Leaving aside for the moment the discussion of the financial system, which has played such an important part in closing factories, in creating unemployment, in confiscating homes, in raising taxes, and in forcing you to eke out an existence from hand to mouth, leaving these things aside, what is a brief summary of the concrete suggestions which I have made for the betterment of labor in America? They are these. First, let labor organize under competent leaders. Second, let these organizations strive to obtain for their members a living annual wage sufficient to sustain the workers and their immediate families in frugal comfort. Third, while gaining this economic liberty, let labor organizations be resolved to preserve their political and spiritual liberty in harmony with sound Americanism and Christianity. While advocating the acceptance of these ideals, I have had occasion both to criticize and to oppose many individuals and groups. I have criticized the American Federation of Labor, not because it was helping 3 million skilled laborers to organize, but because it was slow in recognizing the need for helping unskilled labor to fight its battles. I have criticized the CIO, not because it spent its energies in helping unskilled labor to organize, but because certain leaders within its ranks entertained unsound methods of procedure. The broad general principles, both of the AFL and the CIO, are sound as far as I can comprehend. Therefore, to my mind, there is need in America for both organizations. For the Federation of Labor, which is primarily concerned with skilled labor, and for the CIO, which should be primarily concerned with unskilled labor or mass production labor. At no time have I talked differently. At all times have I sustained these principles. Fortunately, as a person engaged in public affairs, I am neither seeking political office, nor would I seek it, nor am I capable of holding an executive post in the ranks of labor. I am nothing more, gentlemen, than a friendly critic and exponent of what I believe to be the sound principles of Christianity and Americanism, sound for the laboring man and for his benefit. In brief, I want labor to succeed. I want unionism to succeed. But I want them to succeed within the structure of our Americanism and our Christianity. Here then, I come in conflict with the communists and extreme socialists. When certain leaders of the CIO, for example, seek to establish a labor political party, oh, I condemn their proposals on the theory that no class, be it the financial class the industrial class, the professional class, or the laboring class, has the right to dominate the political affairs of these United States. When other leaders within the ranks of the CIO make overtures to the communists by adopting Bolshevik methods, by working hand in hand with them to establish a proletarian dictatorship, to seize industry, to sow the seeds of world revolution, to breed class hatred and to overturn American government, then I stand opposed to them. But by no stretch of the imagination can my opposition to these things be interpreted as an opposition to sound unionism or to the general objectives of the AFL or the CIO. Unionism that begets economic independence for labor through Christian American methods and not through godless Soviet methods, that is for what I stand and for which I am willing to fight side by side with you to obtain. Thus, if there is racketeering within the ranks of the AFL, such as was uncovered in Detroit last week, must one be accused of being hostile to labor if he condemns it? If there is Bolshevik leadership in the CIO, Bolshevik leadership which repudiates contracts, which creates unnecessary strikes to the detriment of the general public, Bolshevik leadership which uses membership money to propagandize millions of innocent laborers to the end that they will assist the cause of communism in Spain, in Mexico, and in America? Am I to be labeled as an enemy of the working man when I point out such evils? For example, the former treasurer of the United Automobile Workers, a CIO affiliate, presented evidence to more than 200 clergymen present at the Shrine of the Little Flower that over a short period of time, more than $23,000 was expended by him officially from the Royal Oak area for the support of radical causes in America and in Spain and elsewhere, and that more than $199,000 during a similar period of time was checked from the Flint, Michigan districts for the same subversive purposes. $199,000 from Flint and $23,000 from Royal Oak of your due money gone to the support of radical causes. Did the laboring men in these districts realize that their hard-earned money, instead of being used to further the cause of unionism in America, was being consumed for such purposes? And is one hostile or friendly to labor when he criticizes the CIO, not because it was established to organize mass production labor, but because it funds, at least to the extent which I have indicated, were being utilized to further the cause of the red flag? Gentlemen of the laboring class, you are the backbone, the sinew, the muscle, the strength of America. And you have been victimized. The communists know these facts as well as do we Christian Americans. The communist recognizes that you have been exploited politically and economically in this nation in years gone by. Thus, their emissaries from Moscow, always careful to hide their identity, always careful to employ the tactics of the Trojan horse, always schooled in the tactics of boring from within, always relying for success on their method of having false front organizations perform their work. These emissaries from Moscow, these apostles of destruction, while preaching the doctrines of unionization and organization, shout from the housetops for the workers of the world to unite. Oh, but they are more concerned with the destruction of our Christianity and of our Americanism than they are with your unionism. What, I ask you, was their record in Russia, in Hungary, in Spain, and in Mexico? Do you expect them to write a different record for America? Keep that point clear. Christians and Americans are not opposed to the broad principles either of the AFL or the CIO. I can safely say that every person who is worthy of the name of American and of Christian is solidly back of you, but will not follow any so-called leaders of labor who, under the pretext of unionism, either intentionally or unintentionally, have adopted the communist tactics and the communist objectives for the destruction of labor, of Christianity, and of Americanism. And these ambassadors of the red flag speak to you of democracy, of liberty, while they attempt to dominate your union. And you laboring men permit these Judas Iscariot to hold office while they betray you and your liberty. Oh, no. You laboring men have not joined the Communist Party. You are not communists. But why do you follow communist leaders who will sell your civic and religious and economic liberties for 30 pieces of silver? Do you know what you are supporting when you are supporting communist leadership? Let me tell you. I have in my possession a membership book of the Communist Party of the United States of America. It was issued to a gentleman in District number 8, City of Chicago, Section number 4, Nucleus 423, and signed and sealed by the district communist organizer, B.K. Gebert. Now on page 14, Section 12 of this Communist Party membership book, which every communist carries, we read the following, quotation: "The strictest party discipline is the most solemn duty of all party members and all party organizations. The decisions of the CI and the party convention, of the CC and of all leading committees of the party must be promptly carried out. Discussions of questions over which there have been differences must not continue after the decision has been made." Gentlemen, you remember what I've just read? If you do, find for me where there is liberty in that Section 12 of the Communist Party membership book.
Oh, there is liberty. There is democracy for you. And printed in their official book. On page 16 of that same book, we read, quotation, "We are the party of the working class. Consequently, nearly the whole of that class should work under the guidance of our party and should create the closest contacts with our party. He who weakens, no matter how little, the iron discipline of the party of the proletariat, especially during the period of the dictatorship, effectually helps the bourgeoisie against the proletariat." Gentlemen, meditate upon that philosophy. Ask your red leaders whether or not they are operating under this instruction from Moscow. Their books say so. Gentlemen of the laboring class, while this stupendous attempt is being made on the part of communist leaders to capture the minds and the liberties of the American working people, the filthiest red herring in all the history of propaganda is being drawn across the trail of truth. You are being told that the enemy of the working people is Nazism. You are being told that the friend of the American worker is communism. You are being asked to believe that the latter stands for democracy and the former for dictatorship. And in the meantime, Lenin and his successors admit that the proletariat of the working people does not have liberty within its ranks, nor argumentation once its leaders have spoken. Mr. Laboring Man, are you so gullible as to believe that there is a vast difference between this communism and this Nazism? Oh, there is little or none, except probably in their technique. Pause for me while I tell you a story. An old German bishop was visiting at my rectory not so long ago, and we were discussing the question of communism and Nazism. One of the clergymen at the luncheon table asked this question. He said, "What's the difference, Bishop, between Nazism and communism?" And His Excellency replied, "Well, suppose you have two roasts of beef ready to put in the oven. Now you put one in for 3 minutes, and then you take it out, and you place it alongside the one you didn't put in. And what do you see? Oh, the one you took out of the oven is brown on the outside and red in the middle. The other one, why, it was red on the outside and red in the middle." My friend, Nazism, for John, is more refined than communism. As yet, it has not resorted to the bloody purge. But both of them have curtailed civil rights. Both of them have lashed out at religion. Both of them have deified politicians like Hitler and Stalin. Both of them have pretended to befriend the laboring men, and both of them have made labor a chattel of the state. Yes, you'll fight against Nazism, a trick of theirs, and you'll fall into the trap of communism, and then see what happens. Try to right, for example, either in Germany or in Russia. Try to agitate for better wages. And you will not need a dictionary, I promise you, to find out the meaning of the word liquidate. Oh, I am undiplomatic enough to state that the majority of laboring men are caught in the whirlpool of propaganda which is stirred up by these imported communists and their fellow travelers, bring to rob you of your civil and religious rights. Communism came here first. Oh, but Nazism will be sure to follow if immediate action is not taken against both of them. That's their trick. Trying to bait you with communism, trying to stir up the rest of the country to fight against you, and then manacle you under some form of Nazism. Believe me, Mr. Laborer, you have nothing to gain and all to lose in siding with either one of them, either at home or abroad. You can't choose between either one of them any more than you can choose between strychnine and carbolic acid. And you laboring men are the class upon these two forms of dictatorship are capitalizing. Away with both of them! When will you laboring men awaken from the anesthetic of deceit which has been fed upon you? When will you recognize that the dictatorship of a Hitler or the dictatorship of a proletarian party, which forbids discussion once its unelected officers have issued their commands? When I ask you, will you recognize that both these forms of dictatorship are devices intended only for the stupid, spineless men and sponge-brained, thoughtless women? No, I'm not running for any political office. I'm not seeking any of your votes. I'm not supporting any political party. I'm trying to help you. I'm not campaigning for leadership in any of your industrial affairs. From all these things, I am free. And because I am free, I can afford to tell you the truth. And I can afford to warn you now, as I did in the years gone by when you wouldn't believe me. Have you forgotten Samuel Gomberg, who pleaded with the laboring men to hold themselves aloof from political partisanship? Or in spite of the great Gompers, have you wedded your destinies to a political party under some crackpot leader? And do you plan to continue doing so? In 1935, when an artificial prosperity was beginning to manifest itself, when you were going back to your job, did I not tell you then what fruits you would reap from your activities? Yes, and these fruits are with us now. The 12 million unemployed, the 22 million on the dole, the ever-increasing confiscation of your property. Did I not tell you that it was artificial and that it was only a worm on the hook to catch fish to support a new line of communism? Did I not warn you that if you entered the political field with candidates or with the open support for candidates, your enemies and your opponents would gang up against you? Gentlemen,
I love the laborer. I sprang from the loins of the laboring class, and I'll never desert you. I've tried to save you from these pitfalls, which were bound to retard the labor movement in America. After all, who are we of the laboring class? Well, let us put aside the silly optimism that some of the spellbinders use at your meetings, and let's face facts. There are 3 or 4 million of you organized under the AF of M. That's true. A similar number of you are organized under the CIO. That's a fact. Combined, you and the Brotherhood represent a sector of no more than 10 million Americans. Now, outside your organizations, there are 40 million voters or more, most of whom are surfeited with the class struggle, which your labor leaders unfortunately have not stamped out. There are millions of shopkeepers, of small businessmen, of professional men who have suffered because of labor's unreasonable strikes. There are millions of property owners whom your activities have driven into hostile camps. Who are you? You are the minority. The minority. A minority that has been exploited, not only by industry, but too often by your own leaders. A minority, however, which if communism and Nazism and their leaders are once disavowed and kicked out, will win the support of every decent man and woman in these United States. I ask you, have your leaders cooperated efficiently with the agricultural class? They have not. Have your leaders cooperated with the so-called white-collared class, the weekly wage earners? They have not. Have your leaders cooperated with the grocery men, the butchers, the haberdashers, the merchants, and the millions who work for them? They have not. Too often your leaders were more interested in the cause of the fine job that you carved out for them, and in the cause of communism, than they were interested in the cause of Americanism and of the poor exploited laborer. Too often they were interested in the impending death struggle between Nazism and communism in Europe, and not sufficiently interested in the cause of Americanism. And they have the effrontery to ascend the rostrum at your meeting and say that we must take up arms, build battleships, planes, and munitions to send abroad and embroil ourselves in a war. When you who listen to this poppycock will be the target of foreign machine guns. Fine leaders. How long, therefore, must America suffer from unreasonable, useless strikes, for example? Why are the strikes? Today, we are infested in Michigan with strikes, not because the leaders are demanding this or that for the laboring man, but the leaders are fighting among themselves over which side will collect the due money. My radical opponents have spread the lie that I am opposed to strikes because I have characterize the majority of them, not all of them, as useless, inopportune, and wasteful. It is true that you have gained a little from the strike, but it is likewise true that you laborers have suffered irreparable loss from them. Hundreds of millions of dollars from your pay envelope, billions of dollars in the production of wealth, and above all, you have lost your prestige, I'm sorry to say. You have lost the support of the vast body of American citizens who were forced to stand on the sidelines and become smeared with the red mud which some of your labor leaders have splashed upon them. Gentlemen of the laboring class, your cause is a just cause. Your cause is God's cause. To stand by you and with you and to fight for you is regarded as a privilege by every honest man. Now that the politicians whom you espouse have failed you, now that the radicalism which some of your labor leaders espouse has gained ground, now that America is turning definitely from the left and from labor, unfortunately, how can you win back the support of the general public? How can you prevent a wave of reactionaryism from engulfing America? How can you win economic independence? That's the question. We're not going to cry over spilled milk. We're going ahead. To answer these questions, will you gain these objectives by endorsing the cause of communistic Russia? By following the leadership of those who think more of the hammer and sickle than they do of the stars and stripes? Never! To gain these objectives, will you be successful by identifying yourselves with some political party? Particularly, yes, get this point, particularly with a political party that has failed to solve your problems and the problems of the nation? And advertising that fact in the very teeth of the millions of citizens who have been victimized by these politicians? Never! By doing these things, my friends, you are simply inviting hundreds of groups of Americans to throw their forces together against you. I repeat, you are in the minority. Now, as you were in 1936 when you attempted to put political candidates in the field, because you are in the minority and because so many have turned against your radical leaders, you cannot afford to spurn the moral support of public opinion. You and your wives and your children cannot afford to lose. How can we win? Gentlemen, I have a suggestion which will lead you to victory. But before I give voice to it, let me ask you this question. If an agent for the British Empire or for Nazi Germany operated in your ranks to organize you for the purpose of turning you and your families over to England or to Germany, what would you do with him? Even though he were an American citizen, what would you do with him? Even though he protected his constitutional right to pursue his activities, what would you do with him? By the same token, what would you do to an agent for Soviet Russia? Even though he is an American citizen, who wants to make of the United States a colony of Moscow. Yes, I can hear your answer. Just as Nazism belongs to Berlin, as imperialism belongs to London, so communism belongs to Moscow. And there is only one way of treating such emissaries, as I just described. Every labor organization that wants the support of the vast majority of American people absolutely must disavow these people and expel from its ranks all foreign-minded agitators. And this holds good for communism and communists. Is there not some one person in your local union, in your national organization, who has intestinal fortitude in a quantity that will propose a resolution on the floor to sever all relations with communism, with Nazism, and with every other foreignism that is not Americanism? Up to date, the CIO has not gone on record with such a resolution. The CIO has not gone on record with a resolution to condemn communism and to expel communists from leadership. I didn't say membership. Instead, the CIO has pampered men like Harry Bridges. It has contributed to communist causes. It has extended its right hand of friendship to Soviet Russia. It has applauded the activities of the League for Peace and Democracy. It has supported the policy of foreign entanglement. It has gone on record in favor of the loyalist communist murderers in Spain. And it has sat down with the Bolshevik labor leaders of Mexico. And it has defended the Red Cause in America. Those who have criticized such activities saw they were called fascists and anti-Semites. And the great body of labor has been content to accept this name-calling as a defense for their leaders' radicalism. Haven't you more intelligence than that? Are you going to put up with that kind of leadership? In the meantime, regretfully, labor has alienated the support and the good opinion of the majority of American citizens who, gentlemen, if they must choose, will not choose to stand side by side with any organization that cooperates with the godless forces of the hammer and the sickle, and that's final. Who will be the loser? Mr. Washington, as long as a labor organization stands hand in hand with a radical communist or Nazi and operates under radical leadership, you will be the loser. Your wife and your children will be the losers. America will be the loser, and the winner, all the winner. The winner will be the forces of exploitation, the forces of international finance, the forces of the warmongers, all of whom in this contest have adopted the slogan of heads I win, tails you lose. Yes. Reactionaryism will win for the moment, only to be followed by some kind of a revolution and your subjugation. It is my belief that millions of men in the American Federation of Labor and the CIO are experiencing a reawakening. They know that their objectives have not been obtained. They know that their strikes have been futile. Their agitation has gained them nothing except disrepute. And all this time, their objective has been a laudable objective, and always will be such. Therefore, I ask you, laboring men of America, shall we let communistic methods and communistic propaganda stultify our godly American cause? Never! My friends, I still stand by the principle that it is the duty of every laboring man to join his proper union. But why have so many of our laboring men been reluctant to associate with unionism? Is it because of the racketeer? Is it because of the politician? Is it because of the crimson spirit of Moscow that seems to dominate unions? Or is it because of individualism, carelessness? Well, an affirmative answer can be given to all these questions. But the time has come for all Christians and Americans to get into the middle of things and clean out. Clean out the Augean stables of labor that have been dirtied and defiled by communist leadership. Clean them out. Begin from within and oust from leadership the red, godless leaders and their propaganda. Then write your contracts with industry and stand by them. Hold yourselves free from political partisanship. Ask yourselves why the Daily Worker, the New Masses, the Republic, the Voice, Equality, and such filthy publications are content to smear the characters, reputations, and the names of those who oppose communism with the epithet of anti-Semite. Why they attempt to spread the lie that we are against American labor. My friend, do you know, if I were opposed to American labor, I would encourage the communists to continue their boring from within. Because I know what would happen to you and to the cause that you espouse. Just as well I know it today as I did know in 1935 and 36 what would happen to you for upholding a political banner. But because I want you to succeed, because I love your families, your children, I know how to win the support of the American public in general, including the farmers and merchants and property owners. And I suggest, therefore, that your organization go on record against these foreignisms and crush them out of existence. Why, this is America. It must not be Nazified or communized. Let it be a Christian America, guided by the principles not of the atheist Jew, Karl Marx, but by the principles of the Christian Jew, Jesus Christ. I know how the followers of Marx crushed out liberty in Russia, Spain, and elsewhere. I know what they would do in the streets of New York and Detroit and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia today if they thought they had power to accomplish their ends. Before they grow more forceful and powerful, and it will not be long until they will have done so, before then, it is time to eradicate them mentally, spiritually, and physically from our midst. Thus, the combat today is between the so-called popular front and the Christian front. It is a combat upon whose outcome the destiny of America hinges. It's a destiny of happiness and victory for labor, or misery and slavery for labor. Where do you stand? What do you plan to do? Which emblem do you want to fly alongside the stars and stripes? The hammer and sickle, all the cross of the crucified Redeemer.
ladies and gentlemen, there is a ringing challenge made to you. A challenge to clean out communist leadership from the ranks of labor. And I may also add, from the ranks of government. Write to Father Coughlin this week for a copy of the address to which you have listened. Social Justice Publishing Corporation, without the benefit of advertising and the profits gained therefrom, carries the burden of this expensive venture. A venture whose activities, instead of ceasing, must be enlarged this coming October. We endorse no political party. We support no political candidates. Our only concern is Americanism and Christianity. And now at this juncture, may I present to you the voice of social justice, which is heard regularly Monday through Friday over the Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana outlets of this network. The voice of social justice.
Yesterday, the network of the Mutual Broadcasting System was flooded with honeyed words of wisdom. Number one flutter was Elliot Roosevelt, radio chain magnate, son of the president, and the little Sir Echo of the New Deal. And what did he say that was so startling to the liberty-loving ears of America? Well, ladies and gentlemen, here is what he pontificated over a national network. He said, according to reports, that radio censorship might not be too high a price to pay if it will help insulate us against the anti-Semitic oratory of that radio priest. So free speech must be consigned to the political waste paper basket. All America must suffer in order to muzzle Father Coughlin. It is an old story by this time. As America knows, that radio priest is definitely an anti-communist. Since communists are men and women in the flesh and blood, and not concoctions of some poetic mind, they are either Negro or white, tall or short, of Russian, Italian, German, Irish, English, or of other national descent. Briefly, they are either Jewish or Gentile, which is the broadest classification we can make. Consequently, that radio priest is opposed only to the activities of those Jews and Gentiles who have adopted, aided, or abetted communism. Father Coughlin is no more anti-Semite than he is anti-Gentile. But here is the trick. Here is the trick. To win sympathy, the fellow travelers of communism unfurl the flag of persecution. The communist lovers, who, by the way, do not like the odor of the word communism, raise the hue and cry of anti-Semite against any person who singles them out. Therefore, follow Mr. Roosevelt's grade school logic. It runs like this. He who is anti-communist is anti-Semitic. Now, anti-Semitism is so immoral that it should not be tolerated on the airways. Consequently, Father Coughlin should be disbarred from broadcasting. Does Elliot Roosevelt know what he is talking about, since he and his family have been on rather friendly terms with the communists? And since he is a high mogul in the broadcasting world? Oh, yes. I should also remind you that the above pearly words of wisdom which he dropped were only an introduction to Elliot Roosevelt's further remarks. He also said, Father Coughlin's flair for rabble-rousing and his success in attracting funds have built a shrine into a million-dollar big business investment. What his activities have been worth to himself, no one knows. There is a nice insinuation for you. An intimation that Father Coughlin has personally profited as pastor of the Shrine of the Little Flower from the money which millions of grateful Americans sent to him for broadcasting. No, indeed, Mr. Roosevelt. Father Coughlin has turned down dozens of offers to write syndicated articles for the newspapers and did not take advantage of his position for personal gain, as have others whom we need not mention. Nor has that radio priest profited personally in handling any of the funds pertinent to the shrine of the little flower or his broadcasting. No one should know that better than Mr. Roosevelt, who, through his friends and relatives, has access to the reports of the Treasury Department. Why not have the Treasury Department investigate this? I am sure Father Coughlin is ready. Moreover, Father Coughlin is running for no political office and seeks no reward from those who hold political office. But all that is beside the point. The main point is this. The Mutual Broadcasting System refused to allocate time to Father Coughlin because he is, as they say, controversial. Nevertheless, it gives time to Mr. Elliot Roosevelt, whose father controls radio licenses, to give utterances to such controversial remarks as the above. Will the Mutual Broadcasting System prove its worth? Honesty and impartiality by affording Father Coughlin an opportunity to answer his defamer? On this question depends the circumstance of free speech in America, particularly since Father Coughlin is battling against communism and communists and communist fellow travelers. He will not use the radio time for which the people are paying. The Mutual Broadcasting Corporation is expected to deal fairly in this case, come what may, and supply radio time.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next Sunday afternoon at the usual time, may I bid you good afternoon on behalf of Father Coughlin and the Voice of Social Justice. This is your announcer, Franklin Mitchell, bidding you good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've presented the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan. Statements made and views expressed on this program are made on the sole responsibility of the sponsor and do not reflect the views of this station, its management, or personnel.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording, and for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.